Part 31, Chapter 4. After glancing over the flying conditions, Johnny could not much blame Pierre. For a while now, they had been flying through the night, a fact which an experienced instrument pilot would not have thought about twice, and indeed, Johnny had scarcely noticed it. By looking very hard, and only then with trained pilot's eyes, one could just barely make out Mount Elgon rising above the black cloud carpet, for there was no moon, and such a peak became mainly visible because it blocked out certain stars. It was the screens which caused Johnny to forgive Pierre. So thick was the cloud layer below them that the view screens, aimed at it, were more snowstorm than image. You would actually have to know the shape of the lake and the compound to have any notion of what you were looking at. A lot of electrostatic disturbance. It must be raining like fury at the compound. Rain flicked with lightning. Pierre, however, was in a state of mind that wasn't asking for anything but to stand on solid ground. He could not read the screens. He could not see anything but some stars above them and blackness below them, a blackness lashed now and then by some internal flash. He thought they were done for if they tried to go down through that. Who knew what hill they would run into? He would have been petrified had he known that Mount Elgon was higher than they were flying, but mercifully, he did not know that. Nor, even more frightening, that they had passed by a couple of peaks even higher. Magnifying his alarm, Monsieur Tyler had come back to the pilot seat and hummed a strange song. Mon Dieu, one did not sing when one faced certain death. Lunacy! Victoria gave them permission to land, and Johnny felt his way down through the rain clouds. His screens didn't clear up, but knowing the area, he could identify the scraps of image he sometimes glimpsed. It was useless to look through the screen. It looked like it had a fire hose being played on it. Johnny felt for the ground with his skids, more concerned about a bump affecting his passengers than about where he was. He did it very smoothly, and Pierre was again alarmed when Johnny turned off the motors. He thought they were still in the air. The rain was actually making it hard to talk in the cab of the plane. Johnny threw open the door, and there was Kerr standing there, water cascading off him in the plane lights. Even allowing for the deluge, Kerr was awfully glum-looking. He was usually very glad to see Johnny. The last time Johnny had been in Africa, he and Kerr had spent 3 nights working the Kariba rig. The planet Phobia had been very elusive. They had no coordinates for it beyond somewhere around the cyclo sun. And for a while, it had seemed they would never discover it, and Kerr would eventually die from having no breathe gas. The planet was, however, located. It was doing a squashed ellipse. Phobia's perihelion, the point in its orbit where it was nearest its sun, was so much closer to its sun than its aphelion, the point in its orbit where it was farthest. And the distance to its sun from these two points was so vastly different, near and far, that anyone trying to live on Phobia would have perished, even a cyclo.